Late nights with Trav and Lowe's.
Technology. All right. I'll open the show.
Okay, go for it.
Welcome to another Late Nights with Trav and Lowe's. My name is Trav, and that's Lowe's, and that's Jamie.
Hello.
Hola.
You didn't? Yeah, there you go. Do you want to sing a song?
Okay.
Let's sing for these good people. It's a live show, by the way, everybody listening at home. This is a live show that we have going on tonight in conjunction with AIGA. If you missed last week's, that gives you a whole lot of context for who Jamie is and who these people are, and it's really exciting. You ready to sing?
I'm ready. This is on the spot.
Late nights with Trav and Lowe's.
And an audience
if you have a late night.
Who? Come
join us in the late night.
Yeah, that just happened.
That's beautiful.
For your entertainment, we went as awkward as possible.
Thank you, audience. So the title of the whole evening is, what is it? It's Designing Your Authentic Self. And in our last episode, we talk about self-awareness and why it's so important and how to kind of gain a little bit more of it. And then also how to appreciate others once you have that little speck of self-awareness of yourself. I said the word self a lot, right? Just right there.
A lot of self.
We should like edit that into like an auto-tune YouTube video. self-awareness. Yeah.
That kind of sounded like Reading Rainbow somehow to me. I don't know.
Reading Rainbow?
Anything's funny because you can laugh at people not laughing.
Yeah, I'm going to edit all of that. I'm going to edit that and then add a laugh track too. All right. So one thing I was thinking about this episode, we want to talk about having an authentic voice in your craft. And one of the questions that we had just before we did an AMA. You guys at home, go check out that episode whenever that comes out. And we had a question about how do you stand out in a place where there's so many other designers, so many other influences on the thing that you're working on. And what we want to talk about right now is having that authentic voice in your craft. So I'm going to throw this out there and maybe we can just chew on it for a while.
Sure.
A part of having your own authentic voice, especially in the work that we do and in the industry we are in, it means being able to look past the trends that we see, like the newest framework or the newest, like, you know, technology or way of doing things, and create things that are truly meaningful. And so maybe you can talk about, Lowe's, when do you create things that are truly meaningful to you? Like, what is that like?
When it's meaningful to me, despite
the meaningful ones.
Despite the trends?
Yeah.
Okay. So anytime that I make it easier for one of the customers of the company that I work for, one of my customers, right? Because I influence them. Anytime I make it easier by a fraction of a second, it makes it more meaningful for me, because as consumers of products ourselves, anytime that something becomes just a little bit easier for me, just makes my day that much better, right?
I like how you associate meaningful to you with being meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm. So for example, Google Inbox, which I'm a consumer of.
The inbox.
One thing that they do is at the end of an email thread, they'll creepily read it and know and then give me three suggestions of how to have a quick response, right?
Yeah.
And so the persona here is a knowledge worker that is on the go and is reading email in between meetings, when they're going into the cafeteria, etc. And you're not at a position where you can do a long response. And so what they do is they create these quick responses, and 70% of the time they're spot on and say exactly what I need to say. Now what that's done is that sped up my experience with responding to people with all the email that I get at work, right? Mm-hmm. And so I find meaning in creating those moments for the customers that are mine in the realm of influence that I have.
Right. Jamie, when we were discussing this, you had a really great quote that you thought you might share. Do you want to share that? It's the one in italics.
Oh,
is the one you printed?
Yeah.
The one I printed for you.
Thanks for having this.
I'm like a really good prepper.
Yeah, thank you for that preparation.
Prepped.
Yeah. Your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking. Don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you'll find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on.
Why is that meaningful to you?
Well, I mean, Steve Jobs said it, but...
Okay. Uncle Steve.
Uncle Steve, you know, he's got some good ones. You know, I think this actually goes back to, I think, something that I was saying earlier, but early on in my career, I realized you're spending 40 hours a week. Well, I mean, if you're lucky, you know, more or less dedicated to work. If you're not interested in it, if it doesn't capture your imagination, if it doesn't inspire you, if you're just bored to tears, that's your life. Like, oh my God, why would you just waste your life doing something like that doesn't inspire you? Mm. And it's like anything else. Like, you grow with it, you grow into it, you grow, you know, into like different facets of it. It's such a huge part of day-to-day life, at least in current day.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like that. I mean, the tone of this quote here is giving advice to somebody mm-hmm. who's asking the question, how do I find fulfillment in my work and in my life?
Yeah.
And you get those type of questions from people who are experiencing it, you know, a shift in their experience of their life, and also people who are just starting out. And we get those questions a lot, people writing in. And one of the things I try to say is that, you know, don't be so eager to find that thing. Not yet. There's going to be a time where you really need to find that thing. Mm-hmm. But right now, like, maybe this is a great opportunity for you to try a lot of things. Because when you try a lot of things, you learn what you like and what you don't like, what sticks and what doesn't. And the interesting thing about that is all of those things that you learn that you don't like actually come back and inform you later on when you do find that thing that sticks. And so that quote from good old Uncle Steve.
Oh yeah,
Really touched that for me.
Yeah. I might even like go beyond it and say, like, there are things that you are good at, but within the realm of things that you're good at, there's like things that you're good at that will pay you.
Yes, let's draw a Venn diagram.
Yeah, and like I think we've all seen that Venn diagram of like things you're good at, like things that will pay you, and like, you know, things that are like good for the world.
Yes.
I might even add to that, like within the like things that you're good at, is what are your like, what's the like intersection or like cross section of things that you're passionate about? That's mm-hmm. like sort of like icing on the cake. If like for a designer, for example, you know, if you're a great designer, it's a great time to be a designer. If you also love like fitness, like maybe you work at Strava.
Right.
Or, you know, if you love like food, maybe work at like Epicurious. I think there's ways that you can sort of like bisect some of those interests in a way, especially right now because design is sort of like hot in the
there's
industry.
A lot of opportunities.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities. Yeah. You can sort of get both of those things, I think.
What you're speaking about to me is like trying to find that sense of alignment
mm-hmm.
with what you believe in, what you find interesting, and what you're
like we're all nerds about something. Just like, what do you nerd out on? Like, what do you go down the rabbit hole on? And then like see if you can turn that into a job, you know?
Right. I think it was Jessica Hache who was saying like, find the thing that you're going to do for free.
Yeah.
And then just like find a way to make people pay you for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Just like trick them.
I'm going to go save kittens then.
For money.
For money.
Every kitten's life is worth a buck. Mm.
Just a buck?
Just, well, yeah.
Wow. I'm going to see what you think about cats.
Well, we found my passion. It's not cats. So let's talk about ways to find your voice and ways to like find out what it is that thing, because, you know, oftentimes we're so scattered in what we love, right? We're like, oh, I love movies. Well, everybody loves movies. You know, like I love kittens. Well, I don't, but you know, might.
Some people do. Yeah. You not.
Something's wrong inside there somewhere. I don't love kittens. Mm. So how do we find that? What are the ways that you find your voice? What's worked for you in the past, Lois?
Finding my voice. I've done a lot of things in my short life that I've had. And so in doing and experiencing a lot of things, I've found who I am throughout it all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like the common personality and characteristics that just kind of continue. And those are the things that tend to make me not successful or successful. Kind of thing. I understand the common traits that push me forward and the common traits that hold me back. Right. Mm-hmm. And so in doing a lot of things, and not even in design, just, I've been a window cleaner. I've cleaned Chick-fil-A's. You know, I've been a bank teller. I've done everything.
Have you saved kittens?
No.
Don't say everything.
No, I haven't saved.
It's not appropriate.
That's right. It's not appropriate.
So I've not done until your kitten's
here. So there you go. So I've done a lot of things, and I've been able to find my voice within it all. Now, how do you kind of exercise that muscle? And so one of the things you said was do things for free,
mm-hmm.
right? That's kind of what you find that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
Another way to look at it is, if you were to help somebody, what is it that you would do, right? Mm-hmm. Because service or helping others, you have to get out of your own self to help others. So what would that be?
Right. Yeah.
And so in doing that, you start to kind of like chip away at who you are as a person. And as you get closer to that center, you get to find out what your voice is. And so mm-hmm. that's something that, that's
a mentoring.
Yeah. Helping other mentoring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you done any mentorships or been mentored or?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
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 How did that help you find a voice?
Oh my goodness. So one of the like mentees that I've had, she was a middle school girl from a STEM school in Oakland. I was blown away by her. Like, she was 13 and asked the most like incredible questions, like, how do you know when a design is finished?
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff like that, like something that's like an interview question. Like,
right.
and I think that the way that she thought about like design, and even like technology jobs from such a like pragmatic and sort of like, distilling sort of perspective, even at like 13, like really impressed me, and changed the way that I even approach trying to communicate what our design process is to sort of like product partners and like engineering partners, and trying to have like empathy for the fact that like not everyone knows right out of the bat, like right out of the cage, right out of the door, whatever.
The back cage door.
Back cage door. Yeah. Like what this looks like. Yeah, it was really meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how the experience that you're conveying to us about working with this mentee was the fact that she would ask questions.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And ask meaningful questions, right?
Yeah. Like, I feel like asking the right questions is the hardest part of our job.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh, I wish I was smart enough to know just what questions to ask sometimes.
when being asked those, like, really probing questions, it forces you to like dig deep in and find that answer, which mm-hmm. helps you to kind of generate your opinion on something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another way to generate opinion on something is to talk about it. And we have a lot of opportunities as creatives to like to do writing or teaching or, you know, join a podcast or, mm-hmm. or whatever. And in doing, you know, we had this episode, what was it called? Why You Should Publish or something like that.
Why You Should Be a Publisher.
Why You Should Be a Publisher. Mm-hmm. And it was just basically like when you need to generate content, there's this interesting dynamic that happens that everything is a lesson. And like I had a conversation with Lois, I'm going to write it down because that's good. I can use that. And it like actually forces you to be more like observant and more like careful about the things that are happening around you. And in turn teaches you about yourself and the way that you intake information mm-hmm. and the way that you convey it. And it gives you that voice that you've been kind of searching for. When I was in middle school, I had this teacher who we talked about voice for a lot and for a long time, and nobody could really get their mind around it. And then she started just having us write a lot, like every day, like every week there was a new paper, but in class every day we would write a few paragraphs about something. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what. And over time, I really understood what she was driving at is that like by talking, by trying to generate an opinion, you form what your voice is. Another one is connecting with people, but also connecting people. So if I introduce you to Jamie,
right?
There's something.
What
that,
up?
That
Hi.
Hey.
We've all grown. There's something that happens there where I can start to understand the interaction, how they view each other, how they relate to each other, and I can observe those things. How do I fit into that world? You know. And the last one I have written down here is like advocating for things that you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
When you take a stand on an issue that you think is important or that you want to see change in, automatically you have to have that opinion. You have to be like persistent with it, right? You can't really back down once you make like a statement like this needs to change. And they're like, no, it doesn't. Okay. You know, like that's not how you have an authentic voice. Yeah. So yeah, those are the bullet points I had. Do you guys want to add to that list? Or like, what have you done to generate that voice over the years?
As I've gotten older, I've gotten more comfortable with who I am and comfortable that, you know, people disagree with me. right? And and I've gotten comfortable with not knowing everything. And there's some comfort in just what Jamie was saying, like finding out what you nerd out about, finding out you're crazy and accepting that and being okay with it. Because once you understand who you are, you can just grow in the areas that you're strong in, and then you understand what you suck at, you know, and being okay with that has helped me find my voice, right?
Being okay with the suck?
Yeah, being okay with the suck, because I can, it makes it easier to write, because then I've, like, everyone's opinions about what I'm writing, like, don't really affect me anymore, right? But yeah. When I was, even 4 years ago, I really cared about, you know, how's this going to make me look? Is this going to help me? You know, I just worried too much about validation, I guess.
Validation,
in what
okay.
I'm saying, right? And so I don't need that anymore, and not needing it, I can just let my voice go and have my own opinions on things.
Where does the need for validation come from? Why is it so strong in designers? We were joking over in the corner.
Yeah, we were joking.
We were like, I made this thing and I'm completely objective. Do you love me?
Yeah. Take a look at it and just tell me that you love it, me. I mean, mostly it, but me. Like, don't tell me all the things that's wrong with it, just what you love.
Right.
I think it's harder as designers is because we have this like tangible thing that anyone can react to. They'll be like, yeah, I don't like that blue, or that button's too big, because it's easy to say that.
Yeah.
Whereas like code, if I were looking at somebody's code, I'd be like, I don't know. Look
that
at all
code
the, like,
is too codey.
The brackets. Yeah. It's like, this isn't clean code, you know?
Too many brackets, if you ask me.
Like, design is so easy to react to. Mm. And a lot of ways, like, people also, like, give you constructive feedback in terms of a solution. Like, I would make that giant blue button orange, so it's, you know, orange. But really what they mean is, I want it to be a louder color, or more obvious, you know, in the color palette, yada, yada, yada. It's just easier to respond to because it's tangible.
I'm still trying to figure this whole thing out.
Design?
So, like, just detach myself from, like, the, you know, like, the success or failure of the thing you work on.
Yeah.
I remember a long time ago, I shared this story on the podcast, but eons ago, I was a designer at a small agency, and like, I just started, and I walked into like the first like big meeting with the big client, and my boss, who is the owner, he goes, "This is Travis, he's our designer. You can't hurt his feelings, just tell him what you think." And I was like,
I'm a human.
Yeah. I was like, well, that's me then, because like, I didn't have that voice of my own. I didn't have like that kind of like, I didn't know what my, you know, like drivers or ticks were. And it was an interesting learning experience where like is a very, very like crash course in setting yourself aside from the criticism and like being able to separate yourself from the success or failure of the job. And I still struggle with it.
Yeah.
But whenever I like run into that, you know, like that temptation to derive my self-worth from the opinions of others based on my work, I shoot myself back to that moment where this is Travis. He you can't hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm. And I try to stay there a lot. We have a raised hand from the audience.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Wait, luckily you're in the front row.
Yeah.
It's not a long question. how would you describe your authentic voice for you?
My authentic voice?
Yeah. All of you can answer.
Yeah, that's a great question. How would I describe my authentic voice? I've been learning a lot from this past 8 or 9 months at Google. And I've done, most of my work has been in like small agencies and startups. And I'm learning a lot now that the way that I like to share my voice is through influencing other people. And I kind of touched on this before in the podcast where I said, when we work with other people, not only do our voices come through in our work, but also in the relationships that we build. I had this really, really like eye-opening / great experience with another designer where we were working on an internal project, and she kind of like sent me her sketch files and was like, "Oh, hey, you take a hack at it." And it was this really, really interesting moment where I had this decision, like, do I come in, because I was the senior designer in that relationship, where I was like, do I come in and say like, "Well, this is better because of this than this." Or do I say, "Hey, let's talk about what choices you made and what were your intentions and do they come across and how can we make them more refined?" And so instead of, I didn't crack the sketch file at all. I never even opened the email. We just had a series of 20-minute conversations, I think 3 of them. And through that, the project that we were working on was very successful internally. And it was a really interesting moment for me to realize that where I have a great interest in personally, and also It wouldn't be a late night Travis and Lois without a siren. It just really wouldn't.
So for some context, a lot of you came to the event because it was an AIGA event, and we record outside in Redwood City.
We record outdoors.
It is a lively town.
What I was trying to say is that I realized that personally I get a lot of value from working with other people, but I'm finding that just like in my career-wise, being able to touch people that way and influence their work is kind of like the next level of my personal evolution in sharing my voice through my work. It's a great question. Would you guys like to touch on that? What was the question? What is your authentic voice?
Mm. How would you describe it? What is your
blue buttons? Blue buttons.
Not orange. Yeah.
No, that's not my voice.
I mean, I think my authentic voice in the workplace is mostly just trying to remove as much bullshit as possible. Like, you know, sometimes we use a lot of big words. Sometimes we like repeat things that other people say, especially around like feedback. Like, oh, this button is too big because you heard like your 2-up manager say something like that, but you don't really understand it. You're just regurgitating it. So it's like, what are we really trying to do here? Like, just get to the core of it. I don't really know. I think also understanding your authentic voice is all about how it changes over time. I don't think my authentic voice is the same as it was, you know, 5 years ago, as it will be hopefully in 10 years. Like, you know, it's sort of a journey. It's your personal journey. That's what I would say about it.
So I love that you mentioned that your authentic voice changes over time.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I was doing an exercise right now when what was your name?
David.
When David asked the question of what is your authentic voice? And I wanted to have an answer, so I was like quickly scribbling, what is my authentic
voice?
What is it? Big typography.
And then as I was writing, I was like, is that me? I was like, that used to be me. I was like, what about that? I was like, nah, not me. I was like, okay, who am I now? And so, and then being okay with who I am now.
He wrote beard, right? Why did you write beard?
That's his voice, man.
The beard has its own voice.
The beard voice.
My wife is in the audience. You can ask her. Hey, it usually says, hey, don't shave me. I'm still here. No, so I wrote down candid yet collaborative because that's my authentic voice right now in this moment. Is I'm candid and I'm forward with whoever I work with, and I'll call BS if I need to call BS, or I will be candid with, well, I don't understand why this is working, or I understand why you're doing that. And the reason I added collaborative is because I'm not trying to put anyone out. I'm trying to understand and collaborate so that our ideas become better, right? Collaborate and listen.
Let's be back with a brand new edition.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know what I like what you said just there? You said, like, this is my authentic voice in the moment.
Yeah.
And that really respects the fact that we're dynamic people and that when we're with different people, we act in a different way. And when we're like with people that we're very comfortable with, or people that are like in authority over us, or, you know, people that we have influence over, we act in different ways. And that your response really respects that.
Mm. Can I jump in there?
Yes, jump you in. May.
Jump I would in. Even
right
say,
in the deep end.
Yeah, being a lady in a field with a lot of dudes, I find that I have to change my authentic voice in order to be heard the way that I want to be heard.
I like that you said change my authentic voice. Like, it's, you're not becoming something else.
No, it's like I have to put on like my big girl pants and speak louder and be more assertive and like repeat myself multiple times. Mm-hmm. And in case like someone else at the table repeats what I say, I'm like, yeah, that was a great addition to what my original thought was, dude, bro. You know, because like honestly, like my authentic voice is not that aggressive. But sometimes you have to understand, you know, sort of the context that you're in and your environment, and part of that is understanding, you know, the people around you in the settings that affect the way that you're perceived.
I love that. And you hit on two topics, understanding your audience, but also understanding how they perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a lady, as a woman in tech, you are perceived differently.
Yeah, for sure. Like the way that I would say something to an engineer or to a VP is very different than what I would say to a fellow designer or like a junior designer that I'm working with. Like the tone of voice and like, you know, your cadence and how like deep you dive into a project or a problem is going to be very different for all of his audiences.
Yeah, and what I like is that you understand that there's an unconscious bias towards you, and understanding that and understanding the craziness of unconscious bias. That
to understand someone else is crazy.
Yeah. You can position how you're speaking. Yeah. Full circle.
I love whether the open loop is just about closed. We have another comment from the audience.
We have two comments.
It's kind of building on what she's saying. I've had the good fortune of traveling a lot, and especially in other countries where negative feedback isn't given unless you give a safe place.
Mm.
The authentic voice is no voice. It's listening. It's being present, and it's letting others speak and then seeing how you modify. Because I'm very outgoing, that's not necessarily going to work if I'm doing a feedback session in a second-tier city in China, so I end up listening a lot more to fill, see where I can fill in.
Are you saying, I'm just trying to understand correctly, are you saying that oftentimes, depending on the audience, your authentic voice can mean listen?
Can mean not speaking and listening and then understanding and modulate. Yeah.
I like that. Thank you for sharing.
This can come off as aggressive or disrespectful.
And you said there was another one?
Yep, we had another one here.
So the question is, how do you maintain your authentic voice in a feedback session and decide whether it needs to be that first voice listening or that second voice, which is defending your design choices?
Yeah. I think that, to me, that comes down to trying to understand the whether or not the feedback is subjective or if it's constructive. And you just always have to ask why. So if someone, you know, gives me a piece of feedback like, oh, this color doesn't feel right, or, you know, like the density of this is X, Y, and Z. Like, you have to understand why. So, like, why are you saying that? Is it because, like, you want this to be more obvious? Is it because you want to see more results in a smaller amount of space? Until someone can, like, give you a logical sort of explanation for what their feedback means, I sort of take with a grain of salt. And I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks for your opinion. I've heard seven of those, you know, just in the last 5 minutes. So I'm going to, like, collect those, and if there's like a theme coming up, I think I'd start to listen. But more often than not, I can't really respond to feedback unless we can understand what the root of it is. And that is the hardest part of our jobs. And I think the reason it's so hard is because people give us their feedback in terms of solutions, which can often be like, make this bigger or make this, you know, a different color. Because we haven't done the jobs. The onus is on us as designers to help educate our partners in what giving good feedback looks like. And more often than not, that's like, why? Why are you saying that? Why do you think that? Is it because of this? Is it because of that? Because there's no way for you to respond to that feedback unless you understand where they're coming from. Otherwise, you're just going to churn and do like variations and variations, and you're not going to get to the best work.
I feel like she's talking to me.
What?
Because
she literally is talking to you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in a way.
Because I have that passive voice often in feedback sessions where I'm. You know, I throw myself back to that, like, you can't hurt Travis's feelings. And so I'm like saying, okay, like, and I've said in meetings, which is like maybe not a good thing to say, but like, be like, I will do any stupid idea you want.
Ooh, no, I won't.
You're talking to me now. Like, so no. I need to learn from you.
Yeah. You need to hear this. Like you can't stop doing things that people tell you until you understand why.
Yeah. This reminds me of something that Jonathan Cottrell, who's a podcaster, his podcast is called Developer Tea. Mm. So he's a developer, actually. And he is talking about, and I love this language, he says there's feedback and then there's feelback, where someone's giving you this feedback, but it's based on their emotions. It's based on their reactions. They don't have a good reason. It's not like where like feedback would be like we've learned from our user studies that the color blue is like a black hole for interaction. People will click on blue. So if you have one blue on the screen, that's enough. You don't need a lot of blue. Or versus feedback, where I don't like too much blue on a screen. It just makes me feel like there's
it just
too
feels
much
really cold or medicinal.
right.
I can't put my finger on it, but
I love the voice you're doing too. Because like
that's my bullshit voice. Like, really, I just don't know.
Another good way of finding feedback versus feedback is that they come with this voice, and you're like, well, the
you
voice.
You can hear it. You
so
know,
I'm like, not going to do that rendition.
That's funny. I have two things to add to that. Is at Atlassian, there's this design manager that I look up to, and I've brought her up at a podcast previously.
Yeah.
Her name is Mary Claire Dean, and there's two things that her and her team have done. The first thing is they've created these things called feedback cards, and when you're in a critique session, that you pull out these feedback cards, and a lot of times people that are not trained in giving constructive feedback will say a lot of feeling words, right? And so on the card itself, it'll have a feeling word or what they're saying, and then when you flip it around, it says what they're trying to say. And so what she does is she divvies these out with VPs and executives that aren't trained in design thinking and gives them these tools as a way to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And over time, mm-hmm. even with our co-founders, they have learned how to communicate with design thinking. And so the cards are no longer a roadmap or an outline for how to communicate to give constructive feedback. And they just start doing it on their own. Right, the same designer, Mary Claire Dean, the second thing that she does is if it's a lot of, listening and a lot of people telling you, like, I know how to do this, right, and kind of like challenging your education or your color theory, she'll stop in the middle, give them the pen and say, show me how you'd solve it right now, mm-hmm. right, and gives them the opportunity mm-hmm. to solve. And 100% of the time, they reframe what they're saying.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Because now they're talking about application instead yeah. of their feelings.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's go on, do it. And right. she gets out of the way. One comment, two comments, or reactions. Okay. Three.
All right. Okay, and then we're going to...
Can I say one more thing before we go
four.
To...
Four, yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I think the same is true for positive feedback. If somebody's like, oh, I really like this, I want to be like, cool, thanks for your opinion. Why? Like, yeah. what's working about this, I think, is just as valid as what's not working, because you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
If you're like, oh, I have to, like, you know, restructure these things. If this part is working, you need to know that from people that you're working with across the board. Otherwise, it's just sort of like, cool, thanks for stroking my ego that you really like this, you mm-hmm. know? So I would add that.
That's really great advice.
Yeah.
One, two, and then is there three? Okay.
Do you want to come up and grab a mic? You can probably grab Jamie's.
Yeah.
Or,
you might
yeah.
never get it back.
Yeah, that's right. And we can probably like get a chair.
I feel like we should have done that a lot earlier. Yeah, sorry right. for everyone who wasn't mic'd.
It's a phrase I learned from someone a long time ago. The word feedback for me has a lot of negative connotation, especially when someone approaches you, can I give you some feedback? It's like, no. Because you're going to instantly be like, oh, great, Mr. Color Theory who went to business school. But, so yeah. I love this phrasing that someone posed, which is feed forward. Because feedback is like rehashing. Feed mm-hmm. forward is like a positive place mm-hmm. that you can collaborate on. The other thing is I've learned, because I do a lot of feed forward sessions, is if you start with I like and then move to I wish and then what if, so it's all phrased in a positive language, you're still giving criticism, but not in an attacking feeling way. It's broken down. And if you start positive, then it kind of de-escalates yeah. the room's energy.
So it was I like,
I wish what if, brought to you by the Stanford D School.
Oh, love it.
Attribution given.
Very good. That was really good. We had another comment.
Thanks for that.
You can come up. You can even move it so that you're sitting if you're more comfortable.
Speaking of feedback, one of the questions that came to mind for me is, how do you think about getting different types of feedback? Because I'm at a startup, and I think it's really tempting to drink your own Kool-Aid, if you will, right? So you'll start, you have so much background, and everybody, even the team you're presenting to, has so much background on the product that even when you do user testing or user research, how do you guys handle that sort of contradiction or that sort of conflict of, hey, we know so much about this product that we're probably reading more into this than the user is, or we're trying to put words in their mouth. Mm-hmm. How do you try to keep that, or at least vary the feedback between people who know a lot about what you do and people who don't?
So to rephrase, yeah. is this what you're asking? How do you control the type of feedback you get?
Yeah, and what amount of variation do you think is kind of the right mix?
Sure. Okay. So one of the things that we do a lot is when, before we're about to give a presentation, we say, this is what's on the table, this is what's changed from last time, these are the feedback points we're looking for, these are the feedback points we're not looking for. And if you can kind of set the context for the conversation you're about to have, it's a lot better than ad hoc trying to correct people along the way. Mm-hmm. Because they, a lot of the times, I mean, you'll find out that these people who are in leadership positions, they have to make decisions all the time. Mm-hmm. And they want to be told what they should be talking about. Sometimes I've been in meetings and the person, the VP or something, and says like, what should I be making a decision about?
Right.
And they'll just ask you, and like, oh, tell me if you like blue or orange. Blue. Okay, let's move on. And if they are directed, they're a lot more efficient and decisive rather than giving their opinion on, like, you know, Moby Dick. It's just...
Right.
Yeah, so what that framework that Travis talks about eliminates rabbit holing, right? Yeah. Because a lot of times in a critique, you'll just go down this one area and you're like, that's not even what I was going to ask you this hour, sure. But now we're here.
And now I have to do another revision based on something that you said that you weren't supposed to talk about.
Yeah. So the framework of where we are, what we're looking for, what we're not looking for should make controlling the type of feedback you get easier.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep.
Thanks for your question.
I'm just curious, as creatives, how closely related your authentic voice is to your identity outside of your work.
Mm. Oh, drop them bombs.
So that was my wife who was asking about my identity outside of work.
Is it the same? Is it mirrored? Do you turn it on? Do you turn it off?
Well, we talked earlier about being able to adjust based on the audience, you know? So if I'm talking to my manager, it's going to be a lot different than I'm talking to my son or my wife. But I think that who I am as a person, and if I've done like the hard work of being becoming self-aware, and we talked in the first episode, then that ideally should come through in all of those conversations, in all of those relationships. They should be able to understand Travis within the context of the relationship.
Yeah.
Do you want to add to that?
No, I like that.
I mean, I was just thinking about like what my work self is and how that differs from my personal self.
Okay.
I think there's a huge work filter that you just have to have on. And I think that's true for everyone, you know, because we have biases and we have like, you know, some people have colorful language. But I also think that even like a step deeper, like there are things that really gild my lily in the everyday in my personal life that I just, if I had the forum at work to like rabbit hole down, I would, but I sort of have to check myself and I have to like check it at the door. Cause you're right. It's like, it's about like knowing your context and your audience and like what is working against you. I can't bring my whole authentic personal self to work. Yeah. I just can't. It would probably be illegal in some circumstances, you know, just like.
But just to jump on that, I think there are some places where this voice that you develop over time in creative fields, talking about like mentoring other people or learning to communicate your passions are or connecting other people. These things definitely can feed back into your personal relationships and like communication skills. As a creator, this is like what we're about, right? Empathy and understanding other people, making solutions for them is what we're about. This hopefully would feed back to our personal relationships. And a part of that is working internally. And also part of that is like helping that your partner to come onto the same place, just as if you're in work trying to help someone with a design. Mm-hmm. Cool. Did we have another one?
That was it.
Okay. You guys, this has been a fantastic first ever live episode of Late Nights with Travis Lowe's, and you all should be so proud of yourself. We're going to end with another... No, just kidding. We're not going to end with another song. We're done. You want to do the, you do the roll though.
I'll do it. You can find us at TravinLos on Twitter. You can find us at TravinLos on Instagram. We have an email, TravinLos@gmail.com. And sometimes we're active on Facebook/TravinLos. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Yeah. Hear that applause?
Yeah.
That is not superimposed at all.
It's real, y'all.